I read now from a document known as Joe Stack's Manifesto, delivered to the public via the internet on February 18th of 2010. I know I'm hardly the first one to decide that I've had all I can stand. It's always been a myth that people have stopped dying for their freedom in this country. And it isn't limited to the blacks and poor immigrants. I know there have been countless before me, and there are sure to be as many after. But I also know that by not adding my body to the count, I ensure nothing will change. So the writer is telling us that he's found something worth dying for. I'm not sure that I want to find the same for myself, given some of the things that people have seemed happy to kill or die for in recent years. Joe Stack continues, I choose to not keep looking over my shoulder at Big Brother while he strips my carcass. I choose not to ignore what is going on all around me. I choose not to pretend that business as usual won't continue. I've just had enough. I can only hope that the numbers quickly get too big to be whitewashed and ignored, that the American zombies will wake up and revolt. It will take nothing less. So clearly, Mr. Stack is hoping that many will imitate him in doing things like whatever it is he's about to do. And now he urges them on. I would only hope that by striking a nerve that stimulates the inevitable double standard, knee-jerk government reaction that results in more stupid draconian restrictions, people wake up and begin to see the pompous political thugs and their mindless minions for what they are. So he hopes that his performance will promote a government overreaction, which will inspire more angry people to imitate his actions. Groups like Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State also rely on government overreactions to bring in new recruits who will keep the kill-die cycle going. Sadly, though, I spent my entire life trying to believe it wasn't so, but violence not only is the answer, it is the only answer. The cruel joke is that the really big chunks of and here the news site deleted an expletive that was used in the original. The really big chunks of at the top have known this all along and have been laughing at and using this awareness against fools like me all along. I saw it written once that the definition of insanity is repeating the same process over and over and expecting the outcome to be suddenly different. I'm finally ready to stop this insanity. Well, Mr. Big Brother IRS man, so now we know where it's going. Let's try something different. Take my pound of flesh and sleep well. Stack pauses before moving on to whatever performance he's been preparing for. Will he find an effective anger management strategy like Sophie did? Fortunately, you only find those if you're looking for one. Well, we'll see what happens. Let's pause for some music before I tell you more about Joe Stack's strategy and how I think it speaks to us today. Yep. Thank you. you so much. There might have been a little generational barrier there. Does everybody know what that song was? Everybody knows that's Taxman. When the Beatles wrote that when they were pretty angry about being having some really serious taxes like you have in countries that provide like really serious health care and stuff like that. Okay, trigger warning. There's an expletive coming in this sermon that will not be deleted. I hope it doesn't shock you, but I'm guessing that some of us may have heard an undeleted expletive or two spoken in our homes as we get ready to file our tax returns on Tuesday. On February 18th, 2010, Joe Stack woke up, set his own house on fire, then proceeded to crash his private plane into the IRS building in Austin, Texas. One IRS employee was killed, 13 injured, 2 seriously. Stack's action also cost you and me and every U.S. taxpayer $38.6 million to rebuild the facility and shore up IRS security nationwide after the mess he'd made. Commentators began debating the event immediately. Was this an act of Tea Party terrorism? This was a time, remember, when the Tea Party was still taking its shape before it had acquired a distinctly conservative right-wing character and was venting as much anger at the Wall Street and auto industry bailouts and overseas military messes as it was toward liberal healthcare policies. Some trace government scrutiny of Tea Party groups to Stack's attack. Remember how much those were in the news, scrutiny of Tea Party groups? What's wrong with that? If, as he proclaimed, there were many more people just like him getting ready to do things just like he had done, isn't that something we'd want to know about? Wouldn't we have screamed foul? Remember Benghazi? You better call a terrorist attack, unless you want to be followed by people shouting, lock her up, all the rest of your life. If the feds had missed a connection and more terrorist attacks had followed, what rage. I began to read to you, I read you earlier from the end of Stack's manifesto. Now here's how it begins. Here's the start. If you're reading this, you're no doubt asking yourself, why did this have to happen? He assumes that he's gotten our attention with his performance while also acknowledging that we're likely to be bored with what follows, and it is boring. It goes on and on. Needless to say, this rant could fill volumes with example after example if I would let it. I find the process of writing it frustrating, tedious, and probably pointless, especially given my gross inability to gracefully articulate my thoughts in light of the storm raging in my head. Exactly what is therapeutic about that, I'm not sure, but desperate times call for desperate measures. Why the desperation? Stack blames the IRS. He hates taxes, and he assumes that we all feel the same way. His manifesto alludes to some of the elaborate steps that he has taken for years to avoid paying them. He describes how, quote, some friends introduced me to a group of people who are having tax code readings and discussions. In particular, zeroed in on a section relating to the wonderful exemptions that make institutions like the vulgar, corrupt Catholic Church so incredibly wealthy. We carefully studied them and then began to do exactly what the big boys were doing. Journalists following this lead learned that Stack and his first wife had formed a branch of the Universal Life Church, which the IRS declared an illegal tax shelter. One of the several tax fudging strategies of his own that he portrays as noble acts of public witness. The intent of this exercise and our efforts was to bring about a much-needed reevaluation of the laws that allow the monsters of organized religion to make such a mockery of people who earn an honest living. So this wasn't just about taxes. He did it to show us all. To show us all something. Something about religion as well as taxes, some profound truth. The IRS saw through the scam and ordered Stack to pay up on what he'd owed for several years. He fought their ruling for several years more after that, and then came his performance with the house, the airplane, the IRS building, and the human beings inside. He sure showed us. He showed us. Reading the story of Stack's performance brought another one to mind. I had to think of where that came from. Something from my old hippie days. Richard Brautigan's novel, In Watermelon Sugar, is set in a post-apocalyptic world and a small commune of survivors. Its name is written with a small letter, the name of the community, followed by all capitals, I-D-E-A-T-H. How should that be pronounced? I-Death or I-Death? Is this community about death or ideas or both? Brautigan doesn't offer any explanation. I-Death or I-Death is no more the ideal community it was intended to be than, let's say, the USA. Most of its members accept this and do the best they can with all of its flaws and limitations. The story's narrator tells us that there's a delicate balance in I-Death. It suits us. But there's also a loosely organized group of complainers led by a fellow named Inboyle, written with a small I-N followed again by all capitals. It really stands out on the page. They're known as Inboyle's Gang. They make whiskey, and they drink it all the time. And they are angry all of the time. Angry at everything and everybody. No one knows what this community is really supposed to be except for them. And then one day, Inboyle marches them into the fish hatchery where town hall meetings are held. It's time to show everyone what I-Death really means. Charlie and Pauline and some other community members have also come to the hatchery. Inboyle reached into his pocket and took out a jackknife. "What are you going to do with that knife?" Charlie said. "I'll show you," Inboyle said. He pulled the blade out. It looked sharp. "This is I-Death," he said, and took the knife and cut off his thumb. Then all of Inboyle's gang took out their jackknives and cut off their thumbs until there were thumbs and blood all over the place. Why have you done this?" Charlie said. "It's only a beginning," Inboyle said. "This is what I-Death should really look like." "You all look silly," Charlie said, "without your thumbs." "It's only a beginning," Inboyle said. "All right, men, let's cut off our noses." "Hail I-Death," they all shouted, and cut off their noses. Next, Inboyle orders them to cut off their ears, then more fingers, and soon, of course, they're all bleeding to death. "I hope you think you've proved something," Charlie said. "I don't think you've proved anything." "We've proved I-Death," Inboyle said. Pauline, who's been a voice of common sense throughout the story, goes to get a mop and bucket. Upon her return, they were almost all dead except for Inboyle. He was still talking about I-Death. "See, we've done it," he said. Pauline started mopping up the blood and wringing it into a bucket. When the bucket was almost full of blood, Inboyle died. "I am I-Death," he said. "You're an asshole," Pauline said. Since that expletive was the last thing Inboyle ever heard, how could I delete it? And the last thing that Inboyle ever saw was Pauline standing beside him, wringing his blood out of the mop into the bucket. "We'll show you," they said. And then, "We've done it." They've showed us, just like Joe Stack did. And just like many of us have thought about doing, if I'm not mistaken, is there anyone here who has never thought of making some dramatic, bloody gesture in order to prove something? To show people the truth about something? To show everybody how much they've hurt you? Or maybe it's to show them who you really are or what they really are? Well, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'll be saying more about something that happened for me in my next sermon. But I will tell you that Richard Brautigan is not talking about us smart folks versus them stupid ones when depicting Inboyle and his gang. Brautigan spent much of his own life boiling in his own feelings, or drunk, or both. And then at the age of 49, he put a .44 Magnum to his head, leaving behind a terrible mess for someone else to mop up when he was found a month later. His daughter has written a beautiful book. It's called You Can't Catch Death. A beautiful book about the mopping up and the picking through that she's had to do since then. God knows what Joe Stack's kin, and remember, people who do these things have families. God knows what Joe Stack's kin have had to mop and sort. Though Stack's dramatic gesture may or may not have been the first act of suicide terror on behalf of the Tea Party's social and political agenda, it does recall some of the drama of the original Boston Tea Party, with angry colonists, some of them dressed to resemble Native Americans, throwing tons of British tea into Boston Harbor. It's easy to forget that the Tea Act, sparking the protests, had not raised, but rather reduced the net price of tea in the colonies. But do let us recall that the battle cry of this 1773 Tea Party was "No taxation without representation," a slogan that had first been used in Ireland to protest violations of the 1689 Bill of Rights. The bill provided that taxes can only be imposed on people who have local representatives in Parliament to debate them. It did not mean no taxes, period, either in Ireland or in the American colonies. People understood why taxes themselves were important and the good they can do when collected fairly and used wisely. They just thought that someone should talk to them through their representatives before increasing old taxes or adding new ones. They aren't like today's pundits using TV or the radio or the internet to represent all taxes as a form of stealing, to associate taxes with lazy teachers, illegal immigrants, and a plague of parasitic minorities living on the labors of fair-skinned, fair-minded tax martyrs. But do we really want to live in a tax-free world? Do we really want our city streets, our highways, our airports, libraries, dams, bridges, or community health projects like disease control and mosquito abatement to all be privately owned and managed? Do you want to stop and pay a toll every few miles, never knowing what the next armed guards will charge you further down the next private stretch of road? That's how it is in many parts of the world. I've heard stories from my friend Amadou, who researches in Africa, of, you know, pay as you go, because the roads aren't free. Is this what we want here? Okay, I'm no expert. I don't know if I'm doing the best job representing how taxes serve the common good. In my first Labor Day sermon a couple years ago from this pulpit, I showed you a gag bumper sticker that said, "I heart taxes." I think Ruth got that one right at the end. Would you dare to put this on your car? You'd be safer with one that says, "I hate babies," or "I hate Jesus," or "I hate kittens." I still don't know a good dramatic gesture that will really show you. But I do know that taxation itself could use much better representation. Yes, there are flaws that need fixing, and loopholes to be closed, and the whole mess needs to be made a lot clearer and a lot fairer. Our kids need to learn about taxation early and to learn it well. Listening to mom or dad grumble or radio pundits rant or even old proverbs about death and taxes just confuse the issue. Joe Stack taught us no more about either death or taxes by crashing into the IRS building than In Boyle and his gang did by cutting off their thumbs. They added nothing to our understanding of America or I-death. Or is it I-deeth? Tax time, now, is the time when both the idea of the state and the reality of it get into our homes and under our skins. We remember now how dangerous the state can be, how it can take freedom, property, even life away from us. And it's a time of uncertainty. Will I get something back? Will I end up owing more? What am I getting for all this pain and worry? I would be lying if I said that tax time has never caused tension in my family home. Tax forms ask us to disclose so much. That's painful in itself. It can be hard enough for people who care about each other to disclose so much in such detail. What did you spend on books or transportation or on your mortgage? What about those medical bills? This you must disclose to people who you'll never meet and who don't give a damn about you. Who you are, what you did to earn what you earned, why you had to spend what you spent, and what all this means in terms of blood, sweat, struggle, and tears. The pound of flesh that Joe Stack hurled in rage at the IRS. You got your 1040 and 1099, 10 this and 10 that. Why isn't there a form where you can declare what this all means? A place to tell the year's story in words, not just dollars. Where can you list all the things that you feel your taxes should give you claim to, or the things you think they should do for others? Or does this need to happen in a different form altogether? Is there something that we could do right here, today? Maybe faith communities like ours can provide this missing opportunity to testify about the life, the love, and the longings behind the annual accounting that we must all make by the day after tomorrow. A tax service in the sense of a religious service. So let's try an experiment today. Let's use our joys and sorrows time, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul here, as an opportunity for those who wish to share just one thing they'd like to have come out of those 1040s, 1099s, 10 whatever forms, one thing you'd like to have your taxes do for you, for your community, your country, or the world. To save time, let's remain in our seats. I'll repeat what you say into the microphone if necessary. I'll move my hand across. As my hand comes to the section where you're seated, please feel free to share what work you'd like to see your tax money do after you've first worked so hard to earn it and then worked so hard. Has anybody done yet? Yeah, whoa, you guys are early birds. Right? And then worked so hard to report it accurately. Okay? What you'd like your taxes to do for you, for others, for people, for us, for the world. Okay?
Keep the national parks open as well as much wilderness.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with this section since you started it. I'm going to go section by section. That's okay.
Feed and house everybody.
Can you hear okay? Yeah. Feed and house everybody.
Medical care for everyone,
you radical.
Feed the homeless. Healthcare and housing.
Give me shelter.
Equal medical care for everyone.
Care for everyone, right? Now, my care versus your care. Okay, let me see now. So we started kind of in the middle. How about over here?
Reduce fossil fuels.
Right? Work on that stuff.
Addiction services instead of locking people up.
Addiction services. You all heard that? Okay, I won't repeat it then. All right.
Pay teachers better, public school teachers.
Fund
supplies for their classrooms.
Another radical. Paying teachers better and keeping them supplied.
Mental health workers instead of more police.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Fix the infrastructure so we have good roads to drive on.
Another radical wants to drive to Washington without dropping through into the river. Okay. Okay. Thank you. So this section. Oh, was there one more? Okay. Come to this section.
Free secondary education.
Free secondary education.
Free college.
Free college.
Yeah.
Free college.
Post-secondary. Fund libraries.
Fund libraries. Right? Libraries.
Mm-hmm. Spay-neuter program.
Spay-neuter program. Yay. Keep those crazy cats from wandering my fence.
Support the arts and drama.
Support the arts and drama. All of that's that. Those frou-frous, right? Frou-frous, right? Arts never change your life, right? Huh? Oh, another one. Oh, we have two more over there. Late bloomers.
meal delivery and companionship for lonely seniors and others.
Right. Okay. Did you hear that? No. Okay. Meal delivery and companionship for lonely seniors and others in this world where we've known for years our family sizes are going down, 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 down.
Funds for Planned Parenthood and other services.
Funds for Planned Parenthood and other services.
Reparations.
Reparations. You mean for slavery? Is that what you mean?
Or the centuries of
slavery, genocide, right? The foundation that made our economy, right? Okay, free land, stolen stuff, stolen labor. Yeah. Wait. Okay. Wait a minute. Let me go here and then come back here. Yeah.
Find a way to address our international diplomatic challenges besides war and military might.
Find a way to address international diplomatic challenges besides war and might, blowing lots of stuff up. Yeah.
Public transit.
Public transit that really gets there, like not just the central part of Portland, but how about the east side? Huh? Yeah.
Actually fund
the educational mandate. What fun to pass laws, but less fun to actually fund. Yeah.
Affordable daycare.
Affordable daycare, because birth happens, children happen, right? Yeah.
Equal pay for the same jobs. And then also, I can't think of how to express it, but... reasonable pay for executives, for CEOs.
Reasonable pay, right? The 400 times what I make for easier work, right? Yeah.
Public funding of elections.
Public funding of elections. Yeah.
The DEQ that could have cited the disposal facility in my neighborhood before a toxic fire happened.
Yeah, getting there ahead of the fires, okay? Getting there ahead of the fires. Getting there ahead of the contamination causing damage.
Adequate and comfortable housing and utilities and health care for Native Americans.
Okay. Adequate health care facilities for Native Americans, right? One of the most neglected groups of people in our country. Which isn't our country, which is their country. You know, stuff like that. Yeah.
Less people in jail, more community programs.
Less people in jail, more community programs. Yeah.
Community programs for mental health.
For mental health. Once again, mental health, mental health. All we need to do is walk down the street and we're going to have a mental health encounter of some sort, aren't we? Yeah. Well, do you think this would have helped Joe Stack? Honestly, you think it would have helped Joe Stack? I don't know. Let me light a candle for everything that you've said, since we won't be lighting another candle. Bless you for your work and your care and your love and your patience. And all that breath you hold, not on your own behalf, but for all those people you want to speak out for, bless you for that. Blessed be.